Happy Tuesday, everybody. It's Mary Lou Tyler. Today I have a guest who, in her own words, says that she has fallen into this part of the pipeline that we all love, top of funnel. But she has done a tremendous job so far. And I wanted to introduce her to you because she has some really great information that you're all going to benefit from listening to this podcast today. I have with me Patty Lauschman. She is the founder of Revenue Catapult out of Colorado. And I actually met her in a funny way. I got an email from someone that was a cold email. And I love getting cold emails, so continue to send them to me, everybody. But as I was reading through this email, I noticed that it seemed like it was a little bit older predictable revenue email. So I wrote back to them saying, hey, this looks like a predictable revenue email. And they actually forwarded the email on to Patty, and that's how we met. So I got on the phone with her, and I was just intrigued by how she learned about or how she deployed this type of system. Was it, had she read predictable revenue? Did she come up on this? So I invited her to talk to us, and wow, you guys, interesting story. So Patty, tell us, what got you interested in top of funnel, predictable revenue type of systems?
Great. Hi, Mary Lou. Thank you so much for having me on your show today. As a fan of the podcast, it's really an honor to be here talking with you about this stuff. So I think my story is kind of funny because I really probably never should have ended up in this line of work. I had started a tech company back in 2003 and grew it for 9 years. I sold that company in 2012. I had a four-year-old boy at home at the time and was trying to figure out kind of what my next gig was going to be, trying to reinvent myself. I really thought, you know, who's going to hire a former business owner? I was, I had a lot of different skills, but had never gone very deep on most of them. So it wasn't like I could go out and get a job in one of the areas that I managed for my business. So got very, very lucky. I connected with an enterprise software company that was based in Sydney, Australia. They were trying to start an office and their North American presence about 15 minutes from my house. And I connected with them and did a bunch of recruiting for them. They were looking for someone in the local area who had a professional network to draw from. And that was me. And so over a couple of years, I helped him hire a bunch of people. And then one day I was in the office and the CEO kind of pulled me aside and said, hey, what do you think about trying your hand at this outbound prospecting stuff? And I was kind of like, what are you talking about? Like, what does that mean? Like, I'm familiar with inside sales. I'm familiar with outside sales, but I've never heard of this before. You know, tell me more. And he said, well, just go get this book called Predictable Revenue and read the first three chapters and then come back and talk to me. And so I was getting ready to go on a vacation. I got the book and I read it and then I read it again and I thought, okay, well, sounds like sales. I'm not really interested in sales, but there's some things about it that are really interesting for me. And specifically, I liked the idea of using technology to solve a business problem, which I saw, you know, using email to warm up these cold leads as a really interesting concept. So I came back and sat down and talked with him and I said, well, I've read the book twice and it sounds kind of interesting. And he was like, okay, go. I was like, all right, well, I'm going to need a little help here. I had basically an email address, a LinkedIn account, and access to personnel at the company. And that was about all I had to start with. So, you know, I started basically by just putting and I had a database of contacts in their Salesforce account. So, had some contacts and talked to people about the product and tried to understand, you know, what the pain points were of the people that they were going to be expecting me to reach out to. And honestly, I thought I'd give it about 3 weeks and then I would go back to that CEO and say, you know, I tried it and this is just not for me. I really expected that to be my experience. I had no other consulting gigs going on at the time, but I have to tell you, by the end of the first week, when these senior bank executives were agreeing to meet with me because I had sent them an email, I found that absolutely intoxicating. I just thought, I'm sitting here in my little home office sending off these emails, and these very important people in these organizations are willing to give up to me their most important resource at work, which is their time. So, you know, it really took off from there. You know, whenever there's great success in business, I think there's always a combination of smart decisions and a little bit of luck. And, you know, I brought a lot of experience with me into the role. And so I can take credit for that. But what, you know, was really lucky for me in that situation is this company had a product that solved a problem that literally every bank in the world was trying to solve at that time. And they could solve it very elegantly. And I was able to craft really compelling messages demonstrating how they had solved these problems for other people like you as I'm approaching these bankers. And it was great. It took off. You know, once I proved that the model worked, they were willing to put more money into tools like email automation and access to information about the companies I was targeting. And it was amazing. It totally took off. So over about 20 months of part-time effort, I dropped about $30 million in sales opportunities into the top of their sales funnel. So that's kind of my story.
That's your story. But and our listeners are thinking, is this a one-hit wonder? But it isn't, right, Patty? Continue. Well, tell us more.
Okay. Sure. So while I was doing this work for them, I had the same question. I was like, will this work for other companies? And so I kind of put my feelers out there. I have a really good professional network in the area, and I put my feelers out there, and I found a couple of other companies that were willing to, you know, give me a shot. And so rather than doing the work for them hands-on, which, you know, I kind of had this exclusive agreement with this one client, I was going out and talking to other CEOs and saying, hey, I'm doing these amazing things for this company. I wonder if it would work for you. And so I found some companies where they had somebody on staff that they wanted to do this type of work. And so I kind of focused on training them in how to put their own system in place. So I would help them basically crack the code, create a formula from that code, which is basically the messaging, and then, you know, the cadence and installing some email automation that integrates with their existing CRMs. And I was teaching other people how to do this. And every client that I took on in the beginning was having similarly awesome successes. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. Like, this is, you know, I think this is really important. You know, when I had that tech company for 9 years, this was a problem I never solved for myself, not for lack of trying. I just never figured out how to predictably fill my sales funnel. So I knew how valuable this was, being able to add this function to your business.
That's awesome. Now, you mentioned earlier that what you figured out was that you needed to craft compelling messages. When we hear that term in sales, it's a little frightening because salespeople are not sure that they know how to write compelling messages.
Sure.
Is there a secret sauce, Patty?
Wow. You know, I wish I could say that there's one easy formula and I'll sell it to you for $10,000. I could get really, really rich that way. You know, I think there's a lot of fundamental truths. And so I'm going to risk being a little bit general here, but I'll try to sprinkle it with specific examples.
Perfect.
So some of the things I look for when I'm going to take on a client is I want to know that they are willing to focus on a niche, because having a niche that they market to does a lot of really good things for them. I mean, in addition to being a really profitable way to grow your business, because you're doing the same kind of thing over and over, and you can become better and better and better at it rather than doing something different every time you bring on a new client, it enables you to demonstrate to that market that you understand their industry and understand their pain points. I mean, a lot of us who, like when I had my tech company, it's a great example. Every small business owner or medium-sized business owner that I talked to thought their business was different. And I knew from my perspective that if you were a good client for me, you had somewhere between 8 employees and 50 because I knew that your computer networking needs were complex enough to need someone like my staff, but you weren't big enough to hire your own person to put on staff full time. So it didn't matter which industry you were in. All that mattered to me was how many employees you had, because that told me whether you were a good fit for me or not. But they wanted to know that we understood their industry. So if you are focused on a niche and you're targeting all, you know, bankers who are trying to solve the problem of acquiring customers digitally, you can craft a compelling message there, as long as, and this is kind of the other part of it, the market actually wants to solve that problem. Another example is one of the things hospitals are really looking at now is the patient experience. And if you can craft a message to a certain type of hospital executive around the patient experience, you can typically get their attention and get them interested or willing to give up some time to hear what you have to say. So being able to focus on a niche and then making sure that that niche is actually trying to solve that problem. So it's, you know, I'm always on the lookout, or, you know, I'm cautious of companies that are trying to sell ice cubes to Eskimos. Like, you have to be solving a problem that people actually want to solve. So it doesn't matter how good your messaging is if your market doesn't care. So an example of that would be, I was working with a company that did web development, but had kind of expanded into more of a strategic marketing consultancy. And when I first talked with them, they knew one of my other clients who was having really great success. And so the CEO wanted to bring me in to train his VP of biz dev. And I said, well, you guys, you know, I'm looking at your website and you guys are really going to have to focus on a niche. And so I worked with the VP of biz dev and found that they had this great program they had developed for independent optometrists. So these are people who went to school to become an eye doctor, but now they're competing against Walmart Optical, Target Optical, JCPenney Optical for patients. So this company had put together this great marketing program for an independent optometrist. And I said, bingo, let's see if we can do more of this. And so I worked with the VP at BizDev. We put together a list of independent optometrists. We started our campaign, and then the CEO caught wind of it and he goes, oh, no, we don't want to do that. I'm not comfortable trying to acquire companies outside of Colorado. We need to stick with companies in Colorado. And I said, well, there's not enough independent optometrists to really, you know, make a good go of this. Like, if you want fast growth, you need a, you know, precisable market. And he said, well, why can't you just write better templates for our web design business? And I was like, well, probably because there's 1,000 other competitors with the same message. Like, if you just develop websites for people in the local area, you know, there's 1,000 other competitors out there. I can't write you a compelling story if you don't have a compelling story, if that makes sense.
Yeah, there's this concept of unique connection point that we need to have in our messaging. It just has to be there.
Right. So, and that, you know, I have some kind of templates, some frameworks that I work from when I'm developing a sequence of templates for a client. And, you know, some of the things I try to highlight in those templates are the concept of benefits versus features. So from my perspective as a writer, of, you know, features are fine. You know, features are important information about your product, but features don't compel people to give up their time and have a conversation with you. It's the benefits they're going to achieve by using those features that will get people to give up their time. And so focusing on the features of your product, you know, sending an email with a list of features isn't a compelling message. It's not a compelling story, but talking about how other people like you, when I say you, I mean the prospect that you're targeting, your, you know, ideal buyer, when you're, you know, sending a message to that person and you're demonstrating the benefits others like you have achieved by using my company's product or service, that is compelling.
Now, do you also look at the personas themselves? One of the things that I am a fan of is getting out of this general messaging process, and not unlike what you said before about niche, but also segmenting the emails by persona or by buyer. Do you also see that that works really well?
I do, because what a CFO is going to care about is going to differ from what the head of IT is going to care about, which will differ slightly from what the head of retail bank sales is going to care about. So the more you can tailor your message to the person who's receiving it and what they care about, obviously the higher your response rates, the higher your success rates. So absolutely. Doing that as much as possible. And, you know, there's a lot of tools out there today that let you do that pretty easily, where you can import prospects, assign a persona, and based on that persona, put them in a particular, you know, sequence of messaging based on that persona.
Now, some of the folks that are listening on the call, I will have the same question about the actual email engine itself. Now, you've been successful in a variety of ways, but can you talk us through one of the sequences where email was indeed the champion and the phone may or may not have been a part of the sequence? And then also talk to us about when the phone, if necessary, is used to help get those first meetings or at least the raising of the hand.
Sure. So when the first client that I developed the system for and was, you know, given this amazing opportunity to try my hand at something that I hadn't done before, they were, you know, again, very fortunate. They had the right product at the right time and had identified a market that really was hungry for this kind of solution. So in that case, it took very few phone calls to get people to the phone. In fact, a lot of times when we did those introductory sales calls, we, meaning me, the senior sales executive, and then the prospect would communicate, oh, well, Patty called me and we had this conversation about, and we, you know, Patty talked about this and I want to know more about XYZ. And then we'd get off the phone and the senior sales exec would be like, did you have all these phone calls with them? And I would say, no, this was all done through email. And literally the first time I've talked with the person was when I was introducing them to you. So there was this perception by the prospects that we had this long ongoing relationship and all these phone conversations, but it was all done through email.
That?
I know. It was fantastic.
Fabulous.
I mean, so much fun.
That.
And then what was even more fun is that I was targeting companies, banks and credit unions, both in the UK and Australia. And one of my highest compliments came one day when we had talked to this banker in Australia and it didn't quite qualify as an opportunity. So it was still in my hands. And, you know, I always knew from Denver, if I start sending emails around 2 or 3 in the afternoon, they'll come into their inbox around 7, 8, 9 in the morning. And so I reached out to this guy that we had a meeting or two with already over the phone. And I was like, hey, aren't you ready for a demo? You know, can I help you arrange a demo? And he said, yeah, Patty, come out next week. And let's set this up for Wednesday. And I said, well, actually, I'm going to hand you off to my colleague in Australia. I'm actually located in Denver. He had no idea
where you were.
That I was located in Denver. It was perfect. But anyway, so where I see the phone as helpful and sometimes even critical is when the market size is limited and every single contact that you have is very, very, very valuable. So that is where I recommend clients spend more time on the phone, because you want to make the most of every single prospect that you can dig up who matches your ideal buyer persona. Another way, and here's another way that I like to use the phone or recommend my clients use the phone. You know, the email automation tools out there, I have a preference for outreach.io. That's the one that I use with my clients, but they have the ability to identify who is most engaged with the messaging by how many times they're opening the email. So you can set a threshold for, like, if somebody opens the email 5 or more times, create a task to follow up via phone call. Mm-hmm. So I was working with one of my clients last week, and they're using it a little bit differently. They're using this tool to reach out to candidates that they might place in jobs with client companies. And so, you know, I'm working with the COO, and he said to me, you know, we don't have phone numbers for the candidates. We have their emails, but we don't have phone numbers. And I said, well, you know, I think it's really valuable for you to reach out to the people who are most engaged with your messaging. How could we use this? And we came up with this great idea. Actually, I think it was the client who came up with the idea. Anyone who opens the email 8 or more times, we're going to create a task for that person, our rep, to do a social touch. So either reach out to them on LinkedIn or reach out to them on Twitter. And I was like, perfect. So there's, you know, there's different ways to do that. Those are obviously more time consuming touches, but if you are able to identify which of a body of prospects are most valuable to you, then it's absolutely worth that extra time to make the phone call, or, you know, in the case of this other client I'm working with, you know, do a social touch to kind of deepen the engagement with those people.
But as you said, you know, it's leveraging the technology. It's using the email engine to warm up that chill. And for those of you listening who are working account-based sales, where you have your core accounts that your top 20, whatever you want to call them, that you're assigned or you want to penetrate and you want to close, then, you know, blending the phone in, blending social, using LinkedIn intelligently, those are all ways that will help once you get on that phone call. But as Patty's saying, the emails can be written in a way where the clients think they had conversation with you. And that's where we need to get with our emails. You know, I still see, and we all do, emails that come in that the email is telling you to figure out how you fit. And, you know, that's just like you want to delete that email. It's just horrible. But it doesn't have to be like that. And Patty is a perfect example of someone who takes the time, tries to find those nuggets of differentiation, of where you fit, why people should change, why now and why you. I mean, she's cracked that code. But, and again, and correct me if I'm wrong, Patty, you probably won't take clients on where you can't find that essentially that compelling argument. Is
absolutely right. I figure that it doesn't do any good for my reputation to take on clients that I know in advance aren't going to be successful at this. And so I try to, you know, ask enough questions up front that I can identify pretty clearly who can benefit from the system and are they committed to putting this in place. Are they ready for fast growth even? You know, sometimes people think they want to grow fast, but their back end, like their service delivery team, is not ready for that kind of growth. So I'm trying to look at the whole system and see, you know, is this company ready? Are they committed? And do they have that compelling story to tell? Do they have a product or service that a hungry market is looking for and willing to have a conversation about, even if they don't know it exists? Like, is there a pain point out there that this company very elegantly meets? And if they do, I can typically get them getting sales meetings pretty darn fast.
Yeah. And getting that chill warmed up and ready to go. Yep. And I think exactly. A lot of times what companies forget to do is to look outside that box and find those compelling reasons to either move into different markets, to go up market, whatever it is. You know, you've got to be able to go there, and it has to be, you know, in addition to what Patty was saying, the return on investment of putting an actual SDR team in place, right. The revenue has to be there. The tier that you're working on, the accounts you're working on have to justify the body, because you will need to use the phone at some point. Even with all the magic that Patty puts in, you still have to at some point pick up that phone. So
no,
Patty,
definitely.
How do people get a hold of you? I'm sure they're like burning to figure out how to reach out to you now. So what's the best way for my audience to reach you?
Well, I love LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn every day, all day. And it's Patty with a Y, and Laushman is Laushman. People like to put a C in there, but there's no C. And then I also have a company website that has a, you know, contact me form, and it's simply revenuecatapult.com.
And I'll be sure to put those links in the show notes as well, that this will be transcribed. So those of you who are driving, listening to this and want to grab some of those nuggets. They'll be in the show notes on Patty's page. And that way you guys can reach out to her and start, you know, working on getting these compelling emails crafted. The email engine is a fabulous engine, but if you put crap in it, you're going to get crap out of it. And, you know, with Patty's work and things like that, you're creating a story, you're creating a compelling reason for people to want to pick up the phone to call you. And I absolutely love her story about a prospect thinking that they actually had a phone conversation. That's how conversational the emails are, right? That's how they should be. Patty, thank you so much for your time. We really enjoyed talking with you, and I wish you the best. And for everybody who's listening, make sure you reach out to her.
Thank you, Mary Lou.